Hi folks, this week's episode is going to be a bit different than the usual ones. Instead of focusing on a specific event, I'll be focusing on a specific person and will provide a general overview of their involvement in the Troubles. Also, the Troubles podcast recently hit the top 10 charts for Irish true crime, and I'd like to thank everyone for listening, reviewing, or even telling their friends about this podcast. You've all been fantastic supporters. If anyone would like to donate the price of a coffee or pint, you can do so at patreon.com/thetroublespodcast. Finally, if you're looking for more true crime with a slightly different accent, here's a promo for Southern Fried True Crime, a podcast all about true crime in the American South. I'll let Erica tell the rest.
How do you take your true crime? Do you like to sit back and sip on a cold drink while someone tells you a story in a soothing voice? There's no better way to explore the dark underbelly of the Deep South. My podcast, Southern Fried True Crime, is like sitting on a front porch listening to a friend tell you a story, with a slow pull of a slide guitar drawing you in closer. I'm Erica Kelly, and every Friday I spin a new Southern tale, giving you the history of the town, the background of the community and victims, as well as the details of a uniquely Southern crime. Explore historic cases with me, like the saga of Cullen and Priscilla Davis in Fort Worth, Texas. It's the perfect example of money and power trumping justice in the South. Or contemporary cases like the death of Andrew Lewis, a young man shot in the back of the head. The shooter claimed self-defense, and Montgomery, Alabama officials refused to charge him or conduct a proper investigation. I am also passionate about wrongful convictions, domestic violence, and rape culture. Southern Fried True Crime pulls no punches, breaking down the good old boy system. I shoot straight about how racism, elitism, and political connections affect justice in the South. Southern charm is attempted, but I can promise you some Southern sass. So pull up a chair and subscribe if you're interested. I'd love to have you. You can find me on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many other podcast apps. Just search for Southern Fried True Crime. Until then, y'all take care.
Now, back to the episode. Ian Paisley was one of the most influential individuals involved in the Troubles. He fiercely protected Protestant and Unionist interests in Northern Ireland and flat out refused to even talk with nationalists for decades. His thundering speeches embodied the style and power of Martin Luther King, and his influence also led to the rise of loyalist paramilitary groups. He was the ultimate no man, and many believed that he would never soften. But he did. And in the final years of his life, he eventually agreed to sit at the table with nationalists and help pave a future for the people of Northern Ireland. In this episode, we'll learn about the life of Ian Paisley and the role he played in the Troubles in Northern Ireland. This is the Troubles podcast, a podcast which explores the violence and bloodshed that occurred in Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Great Britain, as multiple sides and organisations waged a conflict over the status of Northern Ireland. Born in 1926 in Armagh City, Ian Richard Kyle Paisley was the son of a Baptist minister. His father, James, had been a member of the Ulster Volunteer Force, which was a Unionist militia which were opposed to independence in Ireland. As a teenager, Paisley followed in his father's footsteps and began giving his own sermons to his father's congregation, delivering his first sermon at the age of 16. He was then ordained by his father at the age of 20. Paisley met his wife Eileen in 1956 and married her 3 weeks later. He didn't drink, he didn't smoke, and he referred to alcoholic drinks as the devil's buttermilk. He avoided movies and any forms of frivolous entertainment. Paisley had a commanding presence and stood at a height of 6'3", and was very skilled at delivering sermons, modelling himself on the American evangelical preachers at the time. Here's an example of him preaching.
The situation in our province would not be tolerated for one second in any other part of the United Kingdom. But our political leaders have entered into a deal with the Irish Republican Army, and Ulster is expendable as long as there's no IRA activity on the mainland of Britain. And if there is one person that they have sought more than any other to utterly discredit and to totally annihilate, it's this preacher that's standing before you tonight. But I want to say, as I have said in the past, I haven't got armies, I haven't got money, I haven't got establishments, but I have God.
Paisley was initially a member of the Presbyterian Church of Ireland, but in 1951, there was a disagreement between him and the church, causing him to leave the church and set up his own denomination, which became known as the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster. Over the next 30 years, membership in the church would steadily increase to about 12,000 by 2011. That being said, Paisley's influence grew far beyond his small congregation, as he became the face of unionist opposition in Northern Ireland. The church that Paisley founded is fundamental, and they believe in what's known as biblical literalism, which means that the Bible itself is absolute and without error. In the town of Ballymena, where Paisley was brought up, the playground was chained up on Sundays, so the children would not defile the Sabbath by enjoying themselves. Free Presbyterians are vehemently opposed to the Catholic Church and believe that the Pope is the Antichrist. Their confession of faith states, quote, "There is no other head of the church but the Lord Jesus Christ, nor can the Pope of Rome in any sense be head thereof, but is that Antichrist, that man of sin and son of perdition, that exalted himself in the church against Christ and all that is called God." In 1988, Paisley himself heckled Pope John Paul II at the European Parliament building, shouting at him and calling him the Antichrist before being forcibly removed from the chamber while the Pope smiled and watched on. A number of years before that, in 1963, Pope John the 23rd died, and Paisley is reported to have said that he is now in hell. Here's Paisley delivering a sermon in 1966, criticizing the Catholic Church.
"The very center of the Roman Catholic faith is the doctrine of the Mass. But what is the Mass? The Romanists go to the Mass. The priest says he has priestly power to offer the sacrifice of the Mass at every function that the Roman Catholic Church has. It has this Mass ceremony. That's the central doctrine of the Roman Catholic Church."
Paisley and his church were against anything which would concede ground to Catholics in Northern Ireland at the time. They were opposed to Catholics getting civil rights, opposed to Unionist government beginning a conversation with Catholics, and opposed to the British government conceding to the Irish government. They were what was known as hardline Unionists, who campaigned to protect Unionist interests and had no interest in discourse. As well as that, after Northern Ireland began a campaign to decriminalise homosexual sex acts, Paisley ran a counter-campaign in 1977, called Save Ulster from Sodomy. His campaign was unsuccessful, and in 1982, legislation was passed allowing males over the age of 21 to engage in homosexual acts. Northern Ireland in the 50s and 60s was experiencing a major social change. Since 1922, the Catholic minority had been suffering from various types of discrimination. There was little to no representation for them in government. There was mass inequality when it came to Catholics working unskilled versus Protestants working skilled labour. They were discriminated against with regard to housing allocation, and as well as that, the police force were predominantly Protestant. Northern Ireland at the time was well and truly a Unionist government for Unionist people, and the Catholics were tired of it. In 1964, a civil rights movement began with the foundation of the Northern Irish Civil Rights Association, or NICRA, which gathered momentum quite quickly. The Protestants in Northern Ireland felt threatened by this, and it wasn't long before Paisley became the voice of extreme Protestant opinion. Paisley himself believed the civil rights movement was really a thinly veiled movement for a united Ireland. At every NICRA march, Paisley would organise counter-protests and counter-marches. With every sermon and every counter-protest, his reputation continued to grow as he combined militant anti-Catholicism with militant unionism. In 1966, he was arrested and sentenced to 6 months in jail for unlawful assembly. Upon his release, he established the Ulster Constitution Defence Committee and their paramilitary wing, the Ulster Protestant Volunteers. Their role was to carry out patrols, man barricades, and make lists of IRA suspects. But where was the IRA? At this time, in the early 60s, the IRA had been dormant. Their border campaign in the 50s was unsuccessful, and the provisional IRA had not yet been formed. But Paisley and other loyalists set about instilling fear in the hearts of unionists that the IRA was about to revive and launch another campaign. Paisley was a key figure in the establishment of at least three loyalist paramilitary groups, though he denied this. It is hard to believe that he was a religious leader and also an advocate of violence, but he always walked the tightrope between the two, being careful to leave the room once violence or attacks was discussed, though he may have put all the cogs in motion to get to that point. One such example happened while he was addressing a rally in 1959. Paisley shouted out the names and addresses of Catholic-owned homes and businesses, which were then attacked by the crowd, who demanded "Tighe out." Tighe is a derogatory term for an Irish person. Then, in 1964, an Irish Republican candidate flew the Irish tricolour flag in the window of his office. This was considered an offence at the time, as no flag could be flown except for the Union Jack, which would cause a breach of peace in Northern Ireland. Paisley addressed a crowd of people and threatened to lead them into the office where they would forcibly remove the flag. The RUC intervened and smashed their way into the office to remove the flag. This incident led to rioting between the Republicans and the RUC. So at the moment we have two sides. We have Ian Paisley fighting to protect Protestant values, and then we also have the Catholic minority campaigning for their civil rights. But it's very important to remember that the Troubles wasn't just two sides fighting each other. There were many different forces at work. There were many hardline unionists like Paisley, but there were also some that were willing to communicate with the Catholics. Terence O'Neill was the Prime Minister of Northern Ireland from 1963 to 1969. O'Neill was a member of the Ulster Unionist Party, or UUP, and tried to build a relationship with the Catholic people in Northern Ireland. Here's a quote O'Neill said in the Belfast Telegraph why he believed in civil rights for Catholics. "It is frightfully hard to explain to Protestants that if you give Roman Catholics a good job and a good house, they will live like Protestants because they will see neighbours with cars and television sets. They will refuse to have 18 children. But if a Roman Catholic is jobless and lives in the most ghastly hovel, he will rear 18 children on national assistance. If you treat Roman Catholics with due consider and kindness, they will live like Protestants in spite of the authoritative nature of their church." O'Neill also had a number of visits with the Irish Taoiseachs, Sean Lemass and then Jack Lynch, and was working on building a relationship with the Catholics in Northern Ireland and the government of the Republic of Ireland. Both of these tactics deeply upset hardline unionists. Paisley believed that O'Neill was betraying all Protestants. Though some Protestants may not have agreed with his fire and brimstone style of religion, Paisley was proving to be very popular in the political sphere when it came to protecting Protestant interests. But O'Neill and his government soon began to perceive him as a threat. The BBC documentary, called Spotlight on the Troubles, recently revealed that O'Neill was carefully monitoring Paisley and had recordings made of his sermons. He was planning on prosecuting Paisley for inciting opposition for the Northern Irish government, though this never came to be in the end. O'Neill and his government also suspected that Paisley was closely tied with the loyalist paramilitary groups. For the British government, O'Neill and the UUP represented the acceptable face of loyalism, and they wanted to stem the flow of Paisley and his influence as well, which would have been considered much more radical. Paisley, on the other hand, wanted O'Neill out and set about trying to destabilise the government. In 1969, some of the water and electricity installations in Northern Ireland were bombed, which cut off electricity and water to much of Belfast. Paisley blamed this bombing on the IRA, instilling fear in the hearts of Protestants in Belfast. He declared that this was an ominous indication of what lies ahead for Ulster. But this wasn't the case. The bombings were actually carried out by the Ulster Volunteer Force, with the intention of causing the public to lose faith in O'Neill's government. More recently, it has also been alleged that it was Paisley himself who financed this operation. Later that year, the marches and riots intensified, and many Catholic homes were burned out. In the wake of these riots, Paisley is reported to have said, "Catholic homes caught fire because they were loaded with petrol bombs. Catholic churches were attacked and burned because they were arsenals, and priests handed out submachine guns to parishioners." IRA leader Dahi O'Connell believed that Paisley is directly responsible for an increase in membership to the IRA. When asked if the IRA had targeted Paisley to kill, O'Connell said, "There's no way we'd kill Ian Paisley. He's the best recruiting sergeant we've got. When Paisley said Protestants would take the law into their own hands, a chill goes down the spine of every Catholic in West Belfast. And after that, we had no trouble getting volunteers, safe houses, and money." After the rioting, the government of Northern Ireland realised that they needed help, and the British Army was then deployed into Northern Ireland. Some have argued that this is exactly what Paisley wanted, as the arrival of the army meant that Northern Ireland would be directly ruled by the British Parliament. In 1970, Paisley won a seat at Stormont and was then elected an MP for North Antrim. Then in 1971, Paisley and others formed the Democratic Unionist Party, or DUP. And in 1973, he became the leader of the party. The DUP would be considered more conservative than the UUP and less flexible in their aims and policies. The first attempt to bring peace to the region was in the form of the Sunningdale Agreement, which proposed that Unionists and Nationalists would share power in government. It was proposed in 1973 with the intention of bringing peace back to Northern Ireland. It would give Nationalists cabinet positions for the first time. The agreement also would facilitate the cooperation of the governments of Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Paisley was dead set against this, and saw the relationship of the two governments as a stepping stone to a united Ireland, which he was deeply against. He campaigned against it with the slogan, "Dublin is just a Sunningdale away." Here's Paisley speaking, where he threatens violence into the Republic of Ireland should the agreement go ahead.
"I say to the Dublin government, Mr. Faulkner says it's hands across the border to Dublin. I say if they don't behave themselves in the south, it will be shots across the border."
Paisley and other unionists set up a coordinated effort to thwart this agreement. A general strike was called, which saw Northern Ireland brought to a standstill for 14 days. Loyalist paramilitary groups helped enforce the strike by blocking off roads and intimidating workers from going into work. Then, on the third day of the strike, Loyalists detonated 4 car bombs in Dublin and Monaghan, killing 33 civilians in the Republic of Ireland. In later life, Paisley made comments about this attack, which many found quite controversial. He said, "I was shocked, very much shocked, that there was anyone going to be hurt in that way. But I mean, who brought that on them? Themselves. It was their own political leaders. At that time, the attitude of the South government to Northern Ireland was ridiculous." The general strike lasted 2 weeks before the agreement ultimately collapsed. Though it was a failure, elements of the Sunningdale Agreement would be used in the Good Friday Agreement 25 years later. In fact, the Good Friday Agreement was called Sunningdale for Slow Learners by those critical of it. Paisley was also against the European Economic Community, but despite that, he stood for election in the European Parliament and won a seat in 1979. He hoped to use his seat in the European Parliament as a podium to get his views across. It was here where he heckled the Pope, interrupted Margaret Thatcher, and tried to interrupt Jack Lynch, the Irish Taoiseach at the time. Paisley held this seat until 2004, when he stepped down. By 1981, things in Northern Ireland were dire. The hunger strike was underway in May's prison, which would eventually see 10 Republican prisoners starve themselves to death. During this time, British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher was holding talks with the Irish Taoiseach Charles Haughey. Paisley disliked Thatcher and believed her talking to the Irish Taoiseach was a betrayal of Unionist values. As well as that, Paisley was upset after the IRA executed Robert Bradford, a minister and member of parliament in Northern Ireland. He then set about making his own militia, which would be called the Third Force. His intention is that they would work alongside the RUC and fight any members of the IRA. He held a number of rallies, where members would hold up their papers, which were allegedly firearm certificates. He claimed that membership in the Third Force was between 12 to 15,000 people. In this same year, Paisley's visa for the United States was revoked as a result of his near advocacy for violence. This was a problem for Paisley, who wanted to travel to the USA and provide a Unionist's perspective on the Troubles, as well as to fundraise. Paisley claimed that the cancellation of his visa was, quote, a conspiracy between the Thatcher government and the USA government to sell out Ulster. The next treaty, which was an attempt to bring peace to Northern Ireland, was the Anglo-Irish Agreement. It was a treaty between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland, which was signed in 1985 by British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and Irish Taoiseach Garrett Fitzgerald. I'll keep it brief, but the terms of this treaty stated that there would be no change in the status of the people in Northern Ireland without the consent of the majority of its citizens. It also laid the foundation for the establishment of a power-sharing government in Northern Ireland. Finally, it gave the Republic of Ireland an advisory role in political, legal, and security matters in Northern Ireland. This agreement was universally rejected by Unionists and Nationalists alike. Nationalists disagreed with it because it confirmed Northern Ireland's status as part of the UK. Unionists disagreed with it because the Republic of Ireland's advisory role, and were also unhappy because they were left out of the negotiations for the terms of the agreement. Paisley and other Unionists mounted a huge campaign against this agreement under the name and slogan of Ulster Says No. On November 25th, 1985, Paisley addressed a crowd of over 100,000 people, where he said,
I want to ask a question today, and the question is simple. Where do the terrorists operate from? From the Irish Republic. That's where they come from. Return to our sanctuary, to the Irish Republic. And yet Mrs. Thatcher tells us that that Republic must have some say in our province. We say never, never.
Paisley and other Unionists felt like they were being betrayed by the British government, and he went on to say that he would fight to the death to protect the Unionists in Northern Ireland. In 1986, Paisley set up the paramilitary group Ulster Resistance in direct response to the Anglo-Irish Agreement. The group worked with other Unionist paramilitary groups to successfully import arms into Northern Ireland from Lebanon, though most of the weapons were eventually seized by officers. Ultimately, this agreement was unsuccessful in Northern Ireland, and it would be many years before the true power sharing would occur. It did improve relationships between Britain and Ireland, and many considered the agreement a stepping stone to the Good Friday Agreement, which would occur 13 years later. Paisley was also heavily involved in the Drumcree dispute in 1994. Drumcree is a town in Northern Ireland which is heavily Protestant, but with a large number of Catholics living there. The 12th of July is a special day for Ulster Protestants, celebrating the victory of Protestant King William of Orange over Catholic King James II. Marches are held, where bands pass through the towns all across Northern Ireland, and people dress in orange sashes. In Drumcree, the Orange Order, who are a fraternal Protestant organisation, would march through the town and across areas where mainly Catholic people lived. The Catholics who lived nearby found the march to be sectarian and supremacist and sought to block it passing through their area. There were issues every year, but it came to a head in 1995 when the residents succeeded in stopping the Orange Order from entering their area, at least temporarily, before they were allowed to pass through. Paisley and the UUP leader at the time, David Trimble, held their hands up in the air as they passed through the Catholic area, a gesture largely perceived as triumph by the Catholic residents. It is now the mid-90s, and the Troubles have been raging for nearly 30 years. Sinn Féin had also been growing in popularity and were starting to emerge as a viable political party. Paisley and the DUP refused to engage with Sinn Féin in all levels, seeing them as a thinly veiled IRA and nothing else. This became problematic when peace talks began between all the political parties. They were chaired by American Senator George Mitchell and were made up of a number of groups, including the British and Irish governments and eight political parties in Northern Ireland. The Provisional IRA declared a ceasefire in 1994, and as a result, Sinn Féin were allowed to participate in the talks. The DUP were involved in the early stages of the talks, but pulled out upon learning of Sinn Féin's inclusion. These talks led to the Good Friday Agreement, which would bring a tentative peace to the people of Northern Ireland for the first time in decades. Once proposed, a referendum was held in 1998, and 71% of those who voted in favour of the agreement. On that historical day that the Good Friday Agreement was signed, Paisley and his supporters wouldn't even enter the building. In 2003, the DUP overtook the UUP as the majority unionist party in Northern Ireland. At the same time, Gerry Adams and the Sinn Féin party also overtook SDLP as the dominant nationalist party, bringing in new voices to the political sphere. Paisley was now at a stage where he had the voice and authority in Northern Ireland. He was now 78, and for the first time in his entire life, the historic no man began to soften. It is unclear where this change of heart came from, but it was around this time that Paisley became very sick and came close to losing his life. Paisley recovered from this illness, and after his medication was adjusted, many believe that he had a new lease on life, and his opinion on working with Sinn Féin changed. In 2006, Paisley and the DUP agreed to support a new power-sharing executive that would include Sinn Féin, which was the first time in history that Paisley had endorsed Sinn Féin. In fact, only 4 months earlier, Paisley is quoted as saying at an Orange March, "Sinn Féin are not fit to be in partnership with decent people. They are not fit to be in the government of Northern Ireland, and it'll be over our dead bodies if they ever get there." Then, in October 2007, Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness were elected First Deputy and Deputy Minister of Northern Ireland. The word deputy doesn't really mean anything, as both positions are the highest in Northern Ireland and are both equal. Martin McGuinness was a former IRA leader turned Sinn Féin politician, and Paisley in a past life wouldn't have anything to do with him. The idea that these two people, who waged war on each other for decades, were now working together to build a better Northern Ireland was seen as a massive success for the peace process. Paisley and McGuinness established a great working rapport and were dubbed by the media the Chuckle Brothers, as they were constantly seen laughing together. Paisley's age was finally starting to show, and he stepped down from his position as First Minister in 2008. He went on to step down as Member of Parliament, and then in 2011, after over 60 years of preaching to his congregation, he announced his intention to step down. He retired from religious ministry in January 2012, at the age of 85. On the 12th of September 2014, Ian Paisley passed away. There is no doubt that Ian Paisley's legacy will be remembered. He waged war on just about everyone: Republicans, Unionists, the British government, and even the Pope. He created a movement built on Protestants' traditional anxieties, and he tried to derail each and every peace process that was introduced in Northern Ireland. There is no doubt that his influence greatly contributed to the escalation of the Troubles. But at the same time, Paisley became the peacemaker that millions never believed was possible.